You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody, it's Wednesday, May 24th, 2023. Welcome to the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast, where we're mocking the mocks. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, joined by Michael F. Florio. We got a couple specialists because we're in studio. Shout out to Josh and Susie. Thank you for hanging out with us. We appreciate it. We appreciate you all listening as well. Florio, we got business to attend to in this one today.
Yeah, we got to talk about Con Air.
We are going to continue the film festival. We are talking Con Air today, but also, primarily, we're doing a mock draft. So we got a bunch of our friends from around the industry. Some you may know, some you may not. Our pal Laquan Jones at Real Deal Fantasy is in. Florio and I are in. Who else do we have? We have
Joel Smith.
Joel Smith, our researcher extraordinaire, and just a sort of friends from across the internet that are going to be jumping in. So we're going to go through this mock. We'll see how much of it we get through. I don't necessarily want this thing to drag out because we do have to talk about Nicolas Cage flying in a plane full of convicts.
Across
the desert. It's the important things that we have to get through here in this one. But we are going to do a mock draft. It is a 12-team mock, half-point PPR, one quarterback, 60-second timer. We'll see if we can get through all 15 rounds of this one, and we will kind of break things down as we go along. This will be the first of, I think, a few mocks that we do. I'd imagine we should probably vary our formats as well, but I figured this is just a general one quarterback redraft league, which
is what most people play.
Is what most people play. I know when I put this out, I jokingly got back some responses like, you know, calling me old or calling me basic, which that's fine. I'm cool with being basic.
It's not a dynasty super flex tight end premium with four flexes. What are you doing?
Exactly. Yeah, I get it. Look, you play whatever makes you happy, whatever floats your boat. I think the majority of people nowadays are still sort of playing simple one quarterback leagues, either full point or half point PPR. So that's what we're doing for this draft. Maybe for another mock draft, we'll do something completely different. So, just for frame of reference, I am in the third slot. Florio's in the 11th spot. We will try and update these picks as we go along, but we got plenty of other things to talk about as well. So, I'm going to hit the start draft button. And there we go. We are off and running with the number one overall pick, and it's on the board. and it's Justin Jefferson, which I feel like is going to be kind of consistent this offseason.
Yeah, I had originally thought this might be a year where there's no consensus one, where like it could be Jefferson or McCaffrey or maybe Eckler or Kelsey, but the more drafts I'm doing, the more and more it's like, yeah, Justin Jefferson's one. That's where I have him ranked too.
It seems to be just that's where I've got him ranked as well. Now, I'm curious though, at number two is sort of where things get spicy, because you do still have Christian McCaffrey and Austin Eckler on the board. You've got Jamar Chase off the board. I will tell you that I've been in mocks where I've taken Jamar Chase at number two. Two is going to be, I think, the interesting part of this whole deal.
It's. I always look at drafts as like, where are the spots where you have to make a decision? Yeah. And two is clearly one of them, because like, you're sitting at three. I don't want to like say what you're thinking, but like you could be like, hey, if I get Chase, cool. If I get McCaffrey, cool. And you don't have to make that decision. Now, obviously, you could want someone else, but right. I always like being in spots where decisions are kind of made for you.
Well, Christian McCaffrey goes at number two. So that puts me on the board at number three. And I'm going to kind of stay true to what I've been doing. Like I said, I took Jamar Chase at two before. I'm going to take Jamar Chase at number three right here. So I'll give you my logic for taking Chase over McCaffrey previously is that I think McCaffrey's going to be fine. I think he's going to be very good. What concerns me is last year when he came to San Francisco, he was not just a dominant workhorse back. They still split time with him. I think he played like 2/3 of the snaps. Still a nice number. Very different, though, than the 90 to 95% of the snaps he was playing when he was in Carolina. Meanwhile, Jamar Chase, I think his ceiling is just as high. I think his potential output is just as high as McCaffrey's. I feel a little bit more confident, though, in his floor than I do in McCaffrey, just because the Niners are going to go other places with the football this year.
Yeah, and I agree with that 100%. They have so many weapons. And the thing is, like, remember a year ago when we kept joking, like, who is going to be the first 2,000-yard receiver, Jefferson or Chase? Like, that is still very much so on the table. And I know Chase last year, he didn't live up to that because he missed time and stuff. But yeah, Jamar Chase is, he could easily finish as the best player in fantasy this year, and it wouldn't surprise me at all. But now that Austin Eckler is back with the Chargers, for everything you said about Christian McCaffrey, I'm going to put Eckler as my RB1.
Wow, okay. It's weird. So I went outside the box, and by the way, I should update you on some of the picks. So I went Jamar Chase at number three, Austin Eckler goes at four, Travis Kelce at five.
I can't complain.
I can't really hate it, but man, that's you really are drafting him at a ceiling, and I guess because the gap is so big between Kelce and everybody else, it sort of makes sense. Joel Smith, a researcher, takes Bijan Robinson at number six. And waiting for Laquan, he's at seven, and we'll see where he goes with this one. It appears he's going to go with Cooper Kupp.
Of course.
He does. The Rams fan among us goes with Cooper Kupp there. Tyreek Hill goes at number eight, and let's see what happens at number nine. So here we go. We've already gotten four wide receivers off the board. Five pass catchers, four wide receivers, a tight end, and three running backs. Make it six pass catchers now because Stephon Diggs goes at number nine.
I'm sad he went ahead of Davante Adams. I have Diggs ahead of Adams, okay. But in all drafts, and when I'm late in the first, I could get Diggs typically because Adams is the receiver that goes there, not normally Diggs, so he normally falls. But I'm curious. You said you went outside the box.
So I went outside the box. Yeah, sorry, I got distracted. I went outside the box, and right now, I put Jonathan Taylor as my RB1, just because. I mean, at the time, look, I didn't really believe that Austin Eckler was going to go anywhere. I mean, look, we've talked to people that we know around here that are close to the Chargers, and they have suggested that nothing was really going to happen. But, you know, there was some talk that maybe they could start to lessen his workload a little bit. Florida's on the clock, by the way. I'll finish my thought, and I'll let you kind of jump in. But, then McCaffrey, I told you about my concerns with him. Jonathan Taylor, when he's healthy, we know he is going to be the workhorse. He's going to get a ton of opportunity. And even with Anthony Richardson there, at the quarterback position. I still think this is going to be a run-heavy offense. Now, it could be that Richardson does a lot of the running, but I still think a healthy Jonathan Taylor gets a ton of work. So I had him as my RB1. I may shuffle some things around, but that was sort of what I was looking at when I put my rankings together.
He's my RB3, so you're not going to get an argument out of me. In fact, I think that there you could take the top seven running backs, depending on how you feel about. For me, I have Josh Jacobs and Tony Pollard in there because, like, Josh Jacobs last year was the RB2 overall, and I don't see why they would stop feeding him as much as they did. Tony Pollard, we saw how good he was, a top five running back on limited touches. So to me, like, I've seen people have Tony Pollard as their RB1. I haven't seen anyone have Josh Jacobs, but Bijan, obviously, many people have as their one. Taylor, Saquon. So to me, I think this is one of those years where, like, there's not a consensus top two or three running backs. I think you could take that top seven and kind of jumble them up and you'll feel good with any of those backs. Even though I have it in a specific order that I like them, you could be completely different and I'm not really going to argue.
Yeah. Let me catch everybody up on the draft. So Bijan goes number six, Cooper Kupp at seven. Tyreek Hill goes eight, Stephon Diggs at nine. Jonathan Taylor is number 10, just the fourth running back off the board. You went Devontae Adams at 11. I know you said you were sad that Diggs went ahead of Devontae.
I almost immediately hated that pick because I was like, I should have just took Saquon. Luckily, I got him in round two.
But. So, yeah. So, Florio goes with Devontae Adams at 11. A.J. Brown goes 12. And then Amon-Ra St. Brown around the other end at the turn. So Brown and St. Brown go back to back. Then you go with Saquon Barkley. So you still get Barkley near the top of the second. Derrick Henry follows him at the 2.3. Garrett Wilson is the 2.4. First quarterback off the board, Josh Allen goes sort of mid second round at 2.5. Breece Hall at 2.6. CeeDee Lamb at 2.7. And Nick Chubb at 2.8. So that's pretty much caught up. We're waiting for the ninth pick in the second round there.
How do you feel about Amon-Ra St. Brown now? Because, look, me and you have both liked him for each of the 2 years. And we were last season, we were like, can we please stop with this? Is he good? Is he good?
Right.
Now he went with the first pick in the second round. And, look, he's deserving of it. But, man, do I have pause taking him that early.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I'm okay with it, right? Because, like, right now that makes him, what, wide receiver eight? Am I counting that right? I think he's wide receiver eight in this draft. Oh, I'm on the clock right now. Let me go on.
Ooh, I'll talk while you go to make your
please.
Pick. Like, over Amon-Ra, I would have taken CeeDee Lamb for sure. Even Garrett Wilson. I have Amon-Ra more as like a borderline wide receiver one. But whenever someone jumps up the board as much as he did, like a year ago, he was what, like an eighth round pick? I'm always just like, oh, I remember when I used to get this guy at such a discount. I don't know if I want to pay full price now.
So, see, after Nick Chubb, Josh Jacobs goes at the 2.9. I took Devonta Smith.
Ooh, you're back up.
I'm back up again.
This draft is moving quick.
It does it, which is good. I'm glad. It's moving along. All right, so I am back on the board.
So, right now, Marcus has Ja'Marr Chase and Devonta Smith, two young electric wide receivers. Curious what you do here because the third round is an interesting round where, like, you could go tight end if you want.
Which is what I'm exactly going to do. Travis Kelce's off the board, so I'm going to take Mark Andrews with my third round pick.
And look, obviously Kelce's the tight end one, but almost a full two-round discount on Mark Andrews, that's a good value, I think.
Yeah, no, I'm thrilled with it because, look, Travis Kelce is, we've said this before, he's in a tier by himself. Mark Andrews is sort of in his own tier.
I think he should be. Like, I think there's a big three tier, but I think he should be in his own number two.
Yeah, he's kind of his own number two. And then I think below him, that's when you start getting to the, you know, the Kittles, the Hawkinsons, Waller, Kyle Pitts. I know we've talked about this before. There's like a handful of guys. You can sort of put them in any old order, but they're all kind of in that third tier right there. So right now, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm happy with my start. Ja'Marr Chase, Devonta Smith, and Mark Andrews are my top three picks. I should probably catch you up this way. I took Devonta Smith at 2.10. Kenneth Walker goes at 2.11. Jalen Waddle at 2.12. And I really went back and forth between Smith and Waddle. I went with Smith. T. Higgins starts the third round, followed by Najee Harris. I took Mark Andrews. Patrick Mahomes goes at the 3-4. So we got the top two quarterbacks off the board already. Chris Olave at the 3-5. Tony Pollard at 3.6, which I don't think is ridiculous, but I'm sort of surprised that he has gone after, you know, guys like Kenneth Walker, after Najee Harris, because everybody loved Tony Pollard, right? We wanted Tony Pollard to get all of the smoke. And at the moment, there's really nobody there to challenge him for touches, right? Ezekiel Elliott's still a free agent. I know there's talk that maybe he comes back. But right now, this is the Tony Pollard show. So the fact that he's still hanging in behind Kenneth Walker, who's got competition, Najee Harris, who's in a bad offense, surprises me a little bit.
Yeah, I just said I have him as a top seven running back. I would... Like, to me, I think he could be a late first-round pick, and I'm fine with that. Early second. Anything later than that is a steal. And Joel Smith, look, he's very smart. He's our researcher for a reason. He's building a squad with Bijan Lamb and Tony Pollard.
He does. And, like, the pass-catching upside that he's got, he's taken two running backs in his first three picks, but has enormous pass-catching upside when, you know, if Bijan is the guy we think he's going to be. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure you've seen the video of him lining up at wide receiver.
Oh, man.
You know, Twitter's going nuts over that. We know what Tony Pollard can do catching the football. And then CeeDee Lamb, who's, you know, probably going to get 130 targets or more this year. The pass-catching upside Joel's putting together is pretty legit at this point. After Pollard, Jalen Hurts goes at the 3-7, followed by Deebo Samuel and DK Metcalf. Now we got our social media guru, Aaron Tan, on the board. And Aaron has started back-to-back running backs, Jonathan Taylor and Derrick Henry. So I'm curious to see what he does with his third pick. I will say this. There's a lot of upside there with what Aaron's got. There's a lot of risk involved, too, just because as much as we love – and he goes Travis Etienne. So he starts running back, running back, running back. So Florio's on the clock, so I will filibuster while he makes his pick. Aaron Tan starts with three running backs, Jonathan Taylor, Derrick Henry, Travis Etienne. There is a lot of potential upside if, you know, if Taylor stays healthy, if Derrick Henry, who, you know, has been a beast and a machine at this point of his career, that if he stays healthy, and depending on what his situation is, if he stays in Tennessee the whole season. And then similarly, Travis Etienne, who did get a lot of work, didn't necessarily get a lot of goal line work. And now there are a lot of mouths to feed in that Jacksonville offense. So it looks like it could be great. It could also turn out to be kind of frustrating, depending on how things go there. So after Etienne at the 3-10, I'm still filibustering because Florida's going to be back on the clock really shortly. That's why it's just, you know, nonstop me from, I apologize to you all. Travis Etienne goes at the 3.10. Florio takes Amari Cooper at the 3.11, which I do want to ask you about in just a little bit. Ramondre Stevenson ends the third round. And so now we're waiting for the first pick of the fourth round. But, and it's Joe Burrow, which sort of makes me a little bit sad because I was sort of hoping that he would come back around and maybe
could have been a nice stack.
Maybe I could stack him with Jamar Chase, but that's not going to happen. So Florio's back on the clock, and he goes Calvin Ridley. All right, so you've gone three wide receivers and a running back in your first four picks. I got to ask you about Amari Cooper because he is the wide receiver one in Cleveland. How concerned are you about Deshaun Watson?
I mean, I'm definitely somewhat concerned, but I think I'm the high guy on Amari Cooper right now. I have him as like my wide receiver 14 or 13, something like that. And I know a lot of people have him a lot lower than that. Last year, he was the wide receiver 10 overall and 17 in points per game. But what I like is he's been super consistent. 1,000 yards in six of his last eight seasons, at least seven touchdowns in five of his last six seasons. He's one of three wide receivers with at least 100 targets in five straight years. So I think he's a lock for volume. He's going to be their top target as long as he's healthy. And the thing is, like, he was a wide receiver one with Jacoby Brissett last year. And I know Deshaun Watson came in and played pretty terribly. But sometimes I've seen people say, like, oh, Deshaun Watson might be the worst quarterback in that division. And I'm like, yeah, the upside is he could be the best. Like, right? He's that good. Like, look, I'm not, take everything you want, you feel about Deshaun Watson, the person, away. But as a football player, three and a half years or whatever it's been that he's played at an extremely high level. So I'm willing to give him a pass and say last year was rust. And if that's the case and he ends up looking like his old self, I think Amari Cooper could be a top 10, maybe even higher wide receiver. Ooh, it's almost my turn to filibuster because
my heart is broken.
Your stacks are just blown
up. All of them have gone away. Like, I set myself up for three potential stacks and they have all been blown up. Ah, all right. Let me explain what's just happened here. So after Calvin Ridley, Florio takes him at the 4-2. George Kittle, T.J. Hockenson go back to back. DeAndre Swift followed by Joe Mixon and Jahmyr Gibbs, and then Lamar Jackson goes off the board. So I have Jamar Chase, Devontae Smith, and Mark Andrews, and all three of their quarterbacks are gone. I was really hoping Jackson would fall two more spots. Thank you, Disco Spider, for ruining my dreams. So Jackson is gone. Keenan Allen is gone. So I am on the clock here, and now. I got some interesting decisions to make. I have not yet taken a running back. And so what do I do?
Oh, no, three teams do not have a running back yet. And then there's two teams that have three teams that have three running backs already.
Yeah. Oh, geez. I'm running out of time here. I got 15 seconds to make a decision. This Lamar Jackson thing has thrown me for a loop. So instead, what we're going to do is we're going to take our first running back. We're going to take Aaron Jones here.
When Joe Burrow went, I was in my head, I was like, oh, but you could pair Lamar Jackson with Mark Andrews.
I was really hoping. I mean, two more spots. If Lamar Jackson falls, then I have my stack and I'm sort of back on track. So I ended up having to take a running back here. I take Aaron Jones, followed immediately by Justin Fields and Justin Herbert. So we're pretty much out of the elite quarterbacks, I think.
This is the trend now, right now. And I'll talk about it while you're on the clock again, because Dobbins and Dalvin Cook went. Dalvin Cook in the fifth round. If he's a Viking, that's going to be a steal in a couple of months. But through four rounds, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 quarterbacks. And this is a draft right now where, with a lot of people who do this for a living and do this all the time, and in these sorts of leagues, historically, quarterbacks go super late. Like, everyone wants to play quarterback chicken. And we've already seen seven go in the first four rounds. This is going to be a trend this year.
I think it's a trend because people have realized the value of having even if not an elite level quarterback, a very high level quarterback. You can still make it work by taking a mid to late round guy. But I think the days of you waiting until the ninth or 10th round and having a guy that you can plug in every single week, I think those days are done. Because now if you're waiting to the ninth round, who are you getting? You're getting Matthew Stafford, late career Matthew Stafford. You're getting, Geno Smith, who's a nice piece, but not necessarily that guy. Jared Goff. I mean, those are the guys that you're getting if you're waiting to the late round. So now, yeah, you see Josh Allen in the second round. You see Patrick Mahomes and Jalen Hurts in the third. We had four quarterbacks go off the board in the fourth round. That used to be unheard of in leagues with the sharps, with the analysts. It just wasn't something that you did. All right, so after I took Aaron Jones, I mentioned Justin Fields and Justin Fields, Justin Herbert. I'll get it right. That's how we finish out the fourth round. Fifth round starts with J.K. Dobbins at the 5-1. Dalvin Cook, as Florio mentioned, at the 5-2. I took Terry McLaurin at the 5-3.
I love that pick.
Which DeAndre Hopkins goes right after him at 5-4. Drake London, and I would say I was debating between McLaurin and Drake London. I went McLaurin instead. And then you got DJ Moore, now of the Chicago Bears, at the 5-6. Damian Pierce at 5-7. Mike Evans at 5-8. Miles Sanders goes at 5-9.
I wanted him.
And so now we got Aaron back on the board, who I should mention, Aaron took George Kittle as a 49er fan. I want to say that he's being kind of homerish, but George Kittle in the fourth round, not a bad pick. He also gets his first wide receiver with Mike Williams at the 5-10. So that puts Florio on the clock at 5-11. And just sort of shuffling through some of the top positions as Florio gets his stack with Calvin Ridley and Trevor Lawrence. He comes back around and gets Trevor Lawrence there. So not a bad stack at all.
To me, Lawrence is the fall off at quarterback. Like, I think I don't think he's as good, let's say, as like Fields and Lamar and those guys, but I think he's the last one that I feel real. Then we get to like the Deshaun Dak territory.
Yeah, so I'm like looking at the top quarterbacks left on the board. You got Dak Prescott, Deshaun Watson, Tua still there, Russell Wilson, Daniel Jones, Kirk Cousins. Those guys are all still on the board at quarterback. After Lawrence, Jerry Jeudy finishes out the fifth round, and Kyle Pitts starts the sixth round. So it's back to Florio there.
Tight end run.
Yeah. Oh, we got a tight end run. So Darren Waller now, who I know that you are team Waller. So you get your guy at six. I think that's pretty good.
It was going to be him or Pitts for me here. And Pitts went the pick before me, which last year me would have been brokenhearted. This year me, I'm like, could be terrible. Could be a good thing. Who knows?
Could be. You know, I think Darren Waller's going to be just fine. I mean, he is, I think we've said it on this show, he is the only Giants pass catcher that I really would try to target. Just because everybody else, I mean, it's like a collection of slot receivers, basically, that doesn't really seem to excite me a whole lot. So I'm trying to think where else.
Going back to it real quick, though, yeah. I love your Terry McLaurin pick. I think Terry is so undervalued every year. Like, I know the last couple of years he's been more of a wide receiver two-ish and inconsistent, but that's all on the quarterback play. And I think this year it could be better because if Sam Howell isn't the answer – they have Brissett, who we know can elevate, who elevated Amari Cooper a year ago. So, I don't know. I feel like Terry, fifth round behind some of the receivers that he goes, I think it's a really good pick.
Yeah, no, I'm happy with it. I mean, he's my third wide receiver. I'm rolling out there with Chase Smith and Terry McLaurin. I feel pretty good about that. So, I'm cool with it. Where else? I'm trying to think of what. So, DeAndre Hopkins at the 5-4 seems interesting just because Kyler's going to be out for a while. We've seen Colt McCoy. Fifth round for D-Hop. I mean, I guess you're sort of banking that he's going to be the target monster there, but Marquise Brown's still there. That it kind of scares me a little bit.
I think that this offense, while Kyler Murray is out, might be the worst in the league. And that is count. Like, I've seen a lot of people say, like, well, Kyler could come back sooner than anticipated. Could he? He tore his ACL later in the season. I believe it was in December, mid-December, he tore his ACL. So now we're talking about him probably not being ready till around the middle of the season. And then let's not forget, the Cardinals have their pick and the Texans pick for the next season. So they could be looking at it like, hey, we could either get Caleb Williams or we could trade and get a ton of capital for him or for a top pick. So like if they start off 1-5 or something like that, what incentive do they have, one, to bring back Kyler? And then two, we hear it all the time that athletes kind of need to build it up mentally and physically after a severe injury like that. I think if you're taking D-Hop there, you're banking on him getting traded. I don't know if you saw Marcus. He went on the and I'm trying to filibuster right now to give you some time.
I appreciate it.
He went on the I Am Athlete podcast this week, and he was talking about other quarterbacks that he would like to play. Of course, Josh Allen being number one. D-Hop talks up the Bills any chance he gets. But then he said, like, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, and we know the Chiefs could use receivers. Like, there's a lot of quarterbacks out there that he's talking up that he wants to play with. I still am of the mindset that D-Hop is not going to be in Arizona this year. Whether he gets traded, whether they just kind of bite the bullet and cut him and give him what he wants, he doesn't want to be there. And I think he's going to get his wish. But all that being said, I still wouldn't take him in the fifth round as of right now.
It seems a little bit spicy right now. Okay, so I'm back on the clock.
Marcus is up. Last pick for Marcus was Brandon Ayuk as his wide receiver 4, which, as a 4, Ayuk is exactly what you want because he has such a high ceiling every single week. Could be a little inconsistent, but you don't care about that when he's your 4 and your second flex in this league. And then David Montgomery. So you get your RB2 there.
Yeah, I don't love it. I mean, I feel like we have very much hit a dead zone. There's been a lot of running backs coming off the board here. Like, I feel like we've kind of hit a dead spot here. So, I mean, my two running backs, Aaron Jones, David Montgomery. I'm sort of banking on Montgomery having that touchdown upside, that if he comes in and he sort of plays that same role that Jamal Williams did last year, where he gets the ball down near the goal line and he's that hammer, that makes me feel pretty good about it. Let me just catch everybody up. After Florio took Darren Waller, at the 6'2". Dak Prescott goes at 6'3". Javonte Williams at 6'4". That's an interesting kind of conversation maybe to have in a little bit. But Javonte Williams at 6'4". Cam Akers at 6'5". Then we get a string of wide receivers. Christian Kirk with the 6th pick. Deontay Johnson with the 7th. Christian Watson with the 8th. Rashad White goes at 6'9". As Florio mentioned, I took Brandon Ayuk at the 6'10".
Tyler Lockett.
Tyler Lockett just went off the board.
We'll value.
We'll catch up here. Brandon Ayuk at the 6'10". Jackson Smith in Jigba goes at 6'11". James Conner at 6'12". Coming back around, Dallas Goedert will start the 7th round, followed by Chris Godwin. And then David Montgomery, as mentioned, I took at 7'3". George Pickens at 7'4". Tyler Lockett at 7'5". I'll tell you what, I'd rather have Tyler Lockett than George Pickens all day.
Oh, yeah. And I know everyone loves the shiny new toy. I will take Lockett at 7.5 over Jackson Smith and Jigba at 6'11 and DK Metcalf at 3'9. I don't think enough people realize Tyler Lockett outscored DK Metcalf last year on less volume. And people are like, the volume's going to get spread out and Tyler Lockett doesn't earn a lot of targets. I'm like, okay, if we're now taking the volume and we're spreading it three ways, wouldn't you rather have the guy who is the most efficient on a per route, per target, per reception basis? Because that's what Tyler Lockett is.
I mean, I think for me, when you look at those two guys, the gap between them, I think, in scoring potential doesn't match the gap between them in ADP. I think they should be a lot. Like, I think DK is going to be good. I think Tyler Lockett's going to be good. The fact that there's almost a complete four-round gap between them doesn't make sense to me.
If you covered up all of the production and stuff and you just flipped, like, if Tyler Lockett looked like DK Metcalf, he'd be going in the 3rd round. Mm-hmm. That's all it is, I think. It's the aesthetics. Like, DK Metcalf looks the part. He makes these amazing catches, which is something that is I've learned with George Pickens, because last year watching George Pickens, I was like, this kid can ball. Like, mm-hmm. And then you dive into the numbers and it's like, no, he looks great when you watch him play, right. But the numbers are all very misleading. So I think DK is obviously very, very good, but sometimes I think it's his style of play leads us to elevate him further in fantasy than he should be.
I think it's what it is. I mean, we see the highlight reel catches, you know, like the things he does that look amazing. But you're right. When you dig down a little bit further, you realize that maybe it's not all it's cracked up to be. I know, you know, friend of the show and wide receiver savant Matt Harmon has broken him down in reception perception, which side note, if you don't subscribe, if you are deep in this and you're not subscribing to RP, you're sort of losing out.
Have you spoke? Yes, you are 100%. It's such a great tool. But have you spoke to him about the Seahawks receivers yet?
Not specifically, but I do know. Look, I know that he's always loved Tyler Lockett. You know, it's hard to not love DK Metcalf. I know you're on the clock right now. You know, I think he thinks some good things about Jackson Smith and Jigba. I know that Harmon truly believes that we're going to see all three of those guys be productive this year. He really believes that the way the Seahawks have gone about this offseason, really going all in on Geno Smith, taking JSN where they did in the draft, he thinks we're going to see a lot less 12 personnel out of Seattle than we have in the past. We're going to see a lot more 11 personnel. That means we're going to see JSN on the field, which means he does have the opportunity to go out and be productive. So I know that that's been the argument from a lot of people that maybe you stay away from JSN because can he get on the field consistently? And I know Harmon thinks that that's going to be true, that it's actually going to happen there. Let's see, where's left off? So I had David Montgomery at 7'3", Pickens at 4, Lockett at 5, Evan Ingram goes at 7'6", Jordan Addison is at 7'7". Is he the first? No, he's not the first rookie receiver. We have JSN off the board. Gabe Davis goes at 7'8", Michael Pittman falls all the way to 7'9". A wow. Little bit surprising right there. Michael Thomas is at 7'10". Florio takes Isaiah Pacheco at 7'11". Alvin Kamara goes at the 7.12.
I have two heartstrings pulling me right now.
Okay.
I didn't want to take Pacheco. The internet thinks I hate Pacheco, but he felt like the best player there. But now there's two different players tugging at my heartstrings. And there's one that I think is the better fit for my current team. Mm-hmm. But then the other one is just my love.
Okay,
but I'm gonna go with the.
You're gonna take the love, and it's gonna. I know what you're gonna do, and it's gonna break my heart. We're going to do it.
Oh wait, maybe we're thinking
Yeah, exactly. See, I knew. I was hoping James Cook would fall to me. So Kamara goes into the 12th. Marquise Brown goes top of the or into the 7th for Kamara. Top of the 8th for Marquise Brown. And then Florida, you go with James Cook. I didn't really think he'd fall to me, but I was sort of hoping maybe he'd fall to me.
He's the one that I think fits my team better because I'm like Pacheco as a RB2 is solid, but like. I don't know. I'll take the up, like he's the safe guy there, and then I take the upside shot with James Cook. I like doing that a lot. Like if I wait on RB2, take a safe one and then an upside one. But my heart play, he's still available. I mean, I'll name drop because it's only me and you in right here. Kadarius Toney is still on the board, and that was hard for me to pass up.
Yeah, you know what? I don't know if he's gonna make it back to you at the 9-11.
Probably not.
Maybe. I if he does, then I'm pretty certain you're going to.
It will be 3 seconds off the clock, and I'll have my pick.
You're going to snatch him up if that is the case. What was I mentioned? Javonte Williams at 6'4". We love Javonte. I just feel like there's no clear indication of when he's going to be ready because this wasn't just a torn ACL. This was a major, nasty, nasty knee injury. I know Sean Payton has been optimistic about what he could be or when he could be back, but would you be comfortable taking him there, the 4th pick of the 6th round?
With that build, yes, because the person who took him has Diggs, Wilson, DK Metcalf, Hockenson, and Miles Sanders, who I think Miles Sanders is underrated. I think he's going to get a ton of work this year. So as like an upside RB2 when you already feel really good about your build, I could see going there. If he was my RB1, like let's say I went 0 RB, then no. To me, he is very much so one of those players that it depends on the team that you have already drafted. And Marcus, you are on the clock. But while on Javonte Williams, not only everything you said, like it being a severe injury, we're not sure when exactly he's going to be there. They also brought in Samaje Perine to be like the anchor early on, I would say. Javonte has a lot of upside, but we know running backs kind of struggle their first year back off of a torn ACL. Speaking of running backs who could get a lot of work, you took Jamal Williams, who could...
Oh, no, I didn't.
Oh, no, you took Jameson Williams. Sorry.
I was like, wait, what?
I saw Lions jersey, and I just... But these two wide receivers that just went back-to-back, those were... If it wasn't Tony that fell to me, I was hoping it was Jameson Williams.
So, After James Cook... Oh, I'm about to be back on the... Well, actually, I got some time. So after James Cook, Zach Charbonnet goes, Quentin Johnston, so a couple rookies back-to-back. Juju Smith-Schuster is up. Oh, let's see. I know what I'm going to do here.
You are one of three teams currently that does not have a quarterback
yet. Yeah, well, it's about to be two teams that don't have a quarterback. Because I'm going to take the shot, and I'll explain in just
a bit.
That
is such... a good value.
I'm gonna explain just a bit. So after James Cook, Zach Charbonnet goes, Quentin Johnston, Juju Smith-Schuster is the 5th pick of the 8th round. Dalton Schultz goes at the 8-6. Alexander Mattison at 8-7, followed by Brian Robinson, Treylon Burks. I took Jameson Williams there at the 8-10. I mean, he is my 5th wide receiver. I can afford to wait on him for a few weeks for his suspension. Kadarius Toney goes at the 8-11, so there goes Florio's shot at getting his guy. Brandon Cooks goes at the 8-12. So we go back to the top of the 9th round. Now, A.J. Dillon, followed by Pat Freiermuth, 3rd pick of the 9th round. I went and I took Deshaun Watson. It really is just kind of an believing he can kind of get back to where he was. And even if he's not the top 3 guy he was in Houston, I'm sort of banking on him being better than he was last year in Cleveland. I will also tell you, I'll let you in on this since it's just you and I sitting in the room. I am probably going to draft another quarterback.
Which I was going to say, if you wait on Deshaun Watson, then you could still pair him with another quarterback that you feel good about. Like, I'll name, it's just me and you in here. Like, Tua is still on the board. Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff, Daniel Jones, Geno Smith. Like, these are all guys that I wouldn't love as my QB1, but as a safety blanket QB2, I love. And then... Jameson Williams, I love his talent. I think those last two picks, Marcus, are like league-winning type picks for you because you can back them both up. They're not starters, but if Watson, they don't have to be your starters, I mean, but if Watson and Williams hit on their upside, your team is going to run away with this.
That's sort of kind of what I'm hoping, right? It's like I'm able to get these guys at values. And so I can sort of add them to the roster and have them come in a little bit later in the year. See, Florio's about to be back on the clock. So let's kind of catch things up on where we are with the picks here. After I take Watson at the 9-3, Cole Kmet comes off the board at 9-4. Jahan Dotson at 9-5. Let's see, who do we have? Anthony Richardson comes off the board at the 9-6. Cortland Sutton at 9-7. Antonio Gibson at 9-8. Tua Tagovailoa finally off the board at the 9-9, followed by Rashad Penny at 9-10. So Florio is back on the board. Taking a look at some of the quarterbacks that are still left. Now, I think at this point, I believe everyone has a quarterback. Yes, everybody has at least one quarterback so far, but some of the guys still out there. Russell Wilson is still there. Daniel Jones, Kirk Cousins, Kyler Murray, Aaron Rodgers still there. Bryce Young, Geno Smith. These are the guys still hanging around on the board right now.
The receivers now are bad.
The receivers, let's look at the receivers left out there. So, I mean, your top receivers, Zay Flowers, Darnell Mooney, Elijah Moore, Alan Lazard, Jacoby Myers, Adam Thielen, Jalen Hyatt. These are your top receivers sort of hanging around. It is thinned out significantly. Your top running backs out there, Tyler Algier, Jamal Williams, Zeke, Khalil Herbert, Elijah Mitchell, Leonard Fournette, Damian Harris, Kareem Hunt, Devon Achane, Zach Evans. These are some of the top running backs that are still hanging out on the board at this point right now. You're about to be back on, but I want to, you know, ask you about your last couple of picks when you make them.
I do not like this last pick that I just made.
Okay, well, then we will talk about it. So it's been Tua Tagovailoa is the 9-9, Rashad Penny at 9-10. We will leave Florio's 9-11 pick. This is a secret till we talk about it. Jamal Williams is off the board, the final pick of the 9th round, waiting for the first pick of the 10th round. This thing is moving along, though, I shall say. We still got about 5 rounds left to go. But I'm looking back at the first round. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 wide receivers and a tight end. Out of the first 12 picks, and I get the distinct feeling that is going to be a common situation across a lot of drafts. I think especially across a lot of really hyper competitive leagues. I just don't think we're going to see the same number of running backs coming off the board early. Round 2, you saw a few more. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 running backs coming off the board in the second round. All right, so Florio, you went wide receiver back-to-back these last two picks. Rashad Bateman with the 9th round pick and Jalen Hyatt with the 10th round pick. You had a couple of Giants on your roster. Did that just happen? Or
yeah, because what I've learned is in drafts like this, remember how we were saying like in all quarterbacks, everyone now goes super wide receiver heavy. So I messed up after I had 3 through 4 rounds and felt great. But then my next 4 picks were Lawrence, Waller, Pacheco, and Cook. So no wide receivers there, and receiver dried up insane. So I felt like Bateman, I was like, I got to take my pick of Ravens receivers here. And I chose Bateman, and I easily could have chose wrong. Like I don't have a strong lean at all of how, because new OC, new weapons brought in. I after Andrews, I don't know how the target's going to shake out. And then I took Jalen Hyatt because I was looking at it and I was like, I'm going to just take the most upside that I feel like it's on the board. And I think he could be their top receiver this year. Like he brings them speed out wide that they need, the downfield explosiveness that they lacked. So I was like, I'll go with some big play upside. But yeah, I could easily see those two picks just not working out.
Yeah, here's the thing. I think Bateman's going to be okay. I think he's going to fit in well in the new offense with Todd Monken. But I think for you, the upside is, you know, you're rolling out here with Devontae Adams, Amari Cooper, and Calvin Ridley pretty much every week. So that does give you a little bit of flexibility to sort of play with the wide receivers that you're drafting a little bit later on in this one. So I don't think it's awful. And Jalen Hyatt, I think, falls under the category of shiny new thing that is sort of there at this point. So let's see. End of the ninth round was Jamal Williams. Khalil Herbert starts the 10th. Florio goes with Jalen Hyatt right after that. Zay Flowers goes right after that. So those two Baltimore wide receivers go within about four picks of each other, followed by Chig Okonkwo and Donovan Peoples-Jones. Chig Okonkwo, I know we all sort of like him. It does feel like a dice roll, though, with a guy like that.
To me, he's one of those... I know, so we said like there's Kelsey, then Andrews, and that big third tight end to me, which takes you through tight end seven. After that, there's like Evan Ingram, David Njoku, and you know, other tight ends that you can like. But if I miss out on the top seven tight ends, I want to double dip. You know, like I'll take like a Chig and Dalton Schultz or something like that, or any sort of combination of those tight end twos, but I would not want to just head into my league with just one tight end if I missed out on the top seven. Joel Smith is Joel, drafting an amazing team
Joel,
right now.
Joel just gut punched me, man. Like, I was looking at Daniel Jones. I was gonna follow up my Deshaun Watson pick with Daniel Jones, but thanks to Joel Smith, it's not going to happen because he took him at the 10-7.
Exactly what you wanted to do with Deshaun Watson, I think Joel did the right way with Anthony Richardson. Like, you get Anthony Richardson first to ensure that you have that upside quarterback, and then you take Daniel Jones, or he could have took Geno Smith or any of these fallbacks that he feels good about. Then you have a guy that you could start early on, so you don't have to start Richardson if you want, but you have so much upside with Anthony Richardson. It's exactly what you did with now Deshaun and your QB too, but I think it's what you want to do if you have Deshaun or Richardson, which is or Tua even, which is the quarterbacks that I want if I miss out on the elite guys.
Yeah. So let's catch up. So Zay Flowers at the 10-3, Chig Okonkwo at 10-4, Donovan Peoples-Jones at 10-5, Ezekiel Elliott, Laquan takes him at the 10-6, which is, you know, look, Zeke's going to sign somewhere. We just don't know where or when, but I can't imagine we're going to get to week one and Ezekiel Elliott's not going to be on a roster. So he goes to the 10-6. Daniel Jones, we mentioned Joel Smith taking him at 10-7. Joel putting together a pretty nice roster here. Damian Harris goes at the 10-8. Jerick McKinnon at 10-9. My QB2 is Aaron Rodgers. I take him at the 10-10. This is where we are now, that Aaron Rodgers is a QB2 on a roster. Jacoby Myers at 10-11, and waiting on the final pick of the 10th round. And it's Kyler.
It's Kyler.
Murray. You know what? I'll say this. I thought about taking Kyler Murray and kind of taking him as a second quarterback, but it felt like too much risk. So I'm waiting to see what Deshaun Watson's going to be. I also don't want to have to be waiting for Kyler Murray. You know, if you take Deshaun Watson and he turns out to, you know, that last year wasn't the fluke and that he is still ungood, I also don't want to have to be waiting who knows how many weeks for another quarterback to get healthy for me.
Yeah, I'm going to be letting other people draft Kyler Murray more than likely this season, but if you take, to me, where Kyler fits is backing up the elite quarterbacks. Like, if you take one of the top quarterbacks, because then you know those guys are going to be playing early on, and you have Kyler as a fallback in case of injury or something like that, but even more so, you have a trade piece. Like, and what I would do in that situation is I wouldn't even wait for Kyler to play a snap. Like, if he's coming back, say, week four and five, I'm trying to trade him because the hype will be at its highest. But, I think that's where Kyler Murray kind of suits in.
So, Kyler Murray, last pick of the 10th round. Darnell Mooney starts the 11th round. Dalton Kincaid goes at 11-2. I take Tyler Algier at 11-3. I know we love Bijan. I know a thing that Cynthia Freeland has cautioned is that Tyler Algier is still going to have a role in this offense. I don't know how big it's going to be, but I also sort of took him with the thought that if anything were to happen to Bijan, he steps into a big role in an offense that's going to be run heavy. And we saw last year, he did a pretty good job with that opportunity. So he goes 11-3. Elijah Mitchell, who was honestly, I was moving the mouse back and forth between Algier and Elijah Mitchell. I took Algier. Mitchell goes right after him. David Njoku goes fifth. Jonathan Mingo is the 11-6, followed by Josh Downs. We're getting a few rookies off the board here in this round. Since we're talking about Tyler Algier, Desmond Ridder was on Good Morning Football a couple days ago saying that he thinks the Falcons are going to be pretty explosive offensively in 2023. They have the pieces to be. Does that make you feel any differently about Desmond Ridder, though?
No. he's a fine, like, late round dart throw if you need a QB2 or something like that. But this is one of those offenses where there's a lot of offenses where I'm like, okay, I'll take the quarterback because I don't know who. This is the opposite. It's like, no. I want the playmakers. And maybe that's bad thinking because maybe Ridder could be what, like, Tua was last year, which is like, look, I love Tua. I was very defensive of him, but somewhat a product of the playmakers and around him. Could that be Desmond Ridder? Yes, but I'm also very scared that Arthur Smith is just going to run the ball a whole bunch.
Yeah, I mean, that's very much a concern that they're going to run the ball a lot. So that's going to impact what Ridder can do. He's not going to run the way Mariota could run. Not that Mariota did run, but he could run. Let's see, where are we now? Jonathan Mingo at 11-6. I know Jonathan Mingo is a guy that people are having a lot of debate over. You're about to be up, so I will hold that question for a couple of minutes. But Jonathan Mingo goes at the 11-6 from the Carolina Panthers. Josh Downs from Indianapolis goes at 11-7. Dawson Knox off the board at 11-8. So Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox both go in the same round, about six picks apart. Samaje Perine at the 11-9. I think Samaje Perine at that spot is really good value, just because who knows exactly when Javonte is going to be ready. And I think either way, he's going to have a role in that Denver offense. But if for whatever reason, Williams isn't ready at the beginning of the year, or look, if he just takes some time to get back. I mean, we've seen guys with ACL tears really take a little bit of time to kind of get back up to speed. Wouldn't be a surprise if he has that situation there for Williams. That means Samaje Perine could end up having a pretty decent role. So after Perine at 11-9, Romeo Doubs goes at 11-10. Florio goes with Rashee Rice at 11-11. And I saw you throw your head back in frustration because Devon Achane goes one pick after. I'm guessing you were targeting him there.
I was debating which order to take those two in, and I looked at the team after me, and I was like, 4-4 receiver running back, but three of their last four picks have been on running backs. I guess that didn't matter.
So Achane goes at the end of the 11th round. Geno Smith starts the 12th. Devin Singletary, you take him at 12-2. Just can't quit your former Buffalo Bills. Alan Lazard at the 12-3. Kirk Cousins at the 12-4. So Jonathan Mingo. I know there's a loud chorus of people out there that just don't like Jonathan Mingo. They just think, skills-wise, there's a lot to be desired, that it's just kind of uninspiring. But I also feel like there's a chorus of people who are like, look at the rest of that receiving core in Carolina. There's plenty of opportunity for him to go out there and be a playmaker. Which school of thought do you fall into?
Somewhat in the middle. I think that there is plenty of opportunity for him to go out there. It wouldn't surprise me if early on, if he's the third wide receiver, because I think Adam Thielen and DJ Chark will start as their top two, but I think Mingo could quickly push them away, especially if they let him play in the slot. I liked Mingo a bit as a prospect, but I do think he's getting, like, landing spot matters, but I think there's some people who are overhyping him. And to me, I'm like, okay, you just you fell in love with the landing spot. You didn't watch the prospect. But I do think there's upside here with Mingo. I think some people are pushing it too far up a little bit, but he is someone, like, if he fell to me where five more picks later than he did, I would have took him over Rashee Rice.
All right. So I'm kind of with you. I think Mingo's, he'll be okay. But then again, he was taken by Joel Smith. We're talking a lot about Joel on this show.
He's drafted on a good team.
He's got a good team. But he's got CeeDee Lamb, DJ Moore, Deontay Johnson, and then he takes Mingo as his fourth receiver. Actually follows that up with Michael Gallup too. So he's definitely taking some swings, but he's got a good core of receivers, and then it's kind of like trying to fill in the gaps from there. I look at it as, look, the situation is going to be advantageous because I think there's going to be plenty of chances for him to compete and get on the field. But I also sort of look at it and say, like, yeah, both things can be true. It could be that he's not Look, there are some things about him that are worth questioning. But on the whole, you know, the opportunity is going to be there. So I just don't overvalue potentially what he could be, I guess, is what I'm trying to say this whole point. So I take Tajay Spears. Let me just catch you. Actually, I'm back on the board here.
Yeah.
So let me,
Tajay Spears, I know, is someone we could talk about him. I know you like him a lot. A tight end two run a little bit with Irv Smith and Greg Dulcich going off the board there. I was planning on taking a tight end too to back up Darren Waller, but now I'm looking at the tight ends that are available and I'm like, oh wait, there's one more. I'm like, well, I might just go in with just one tight end right now. 30 seconds left for Marcus. This is the time of the draft where it really starts to thin out and stuff, but two, it's also hard to do what we're like to talk about it as we're doing it. So I get it. I like, there's a couple of picks that I've been like, oh man, I wish I realized this player was about. I know one that I was hoping fell to me. I didn't think he was going to, but that is a very good pick.
All right. So now that I'm off the clock, I catch up. So after Florio took Singletary at 12-2, Alan Lazard goes at 12-3, Kirk Cousins at 4, Raheem Mostert. We go to the 12th round before, actually, no. Devon Achane comes off the board before Raheem Mostert. That's a little bit of a surprise to me. So Mostert at 12-5, Jared Goff at 12-6, Michael Gallup at 7. See Russell Wilson at 8. Irv Smith. I'm going to let Irv swerve at the 12-9. I take Tajay Spears at 12-10. Leonard Fournette goes at 12-11. Greg Dulcich at the end of the 12th round. Start of the 13th, we get Sky Moore, followed by Elijah Moore. I take Kendra Miller at the 13-3. Odell Beckham goes in the 13th round at pick 4. Jeff Wilson at 13-5. Zach Ertz at 13-6. I'll just tell you that I'm taking swings at this point on running backs who have potential path to bigger workloads. Miller may get some work at the beginning of the year because we're all anticipating Alvin Kamara being suspended, so that could certainly help him. Tajay Spears, I think, might have a small role to begin with, but you know, if people believe the rumors and the Titans do decide to trade Derrick Henry, I think that opens the path for him. I mentioned Algier as being a guy who will have some sort of role, I think, in Atlanta. But if for whatever reason Bijan Robinson is unavailable, then that opens some things up there for him as well. Through 12 rounds, how are you feeling about your squad?
I easily could have liked it better if a couple of picks were different. It's one of those things that I love the first 8 picks of this draft, but from 9 on, I kind of hated it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we've all had those mocks, right? Where like one thing sort of goes sideways and you kind of spiral a little bit. So I totally get it. But then again, this is why we do mock drafts, right? So like, you know, you can sort of prepare for when things like that happen. Let's see. So after Zach Ertz, Nico Collins comes off the board. Right now, he looks like the wide receiver 1 in Houston. I know it's not exciting, but he looks like the wide receiver 1 there.
Yeah, and it's going to be funny to see where, if any of the rest of them go, because like seeing 3 Dolphins running backs go within like 15 picks, it's like, yeah, that's understandable. It could be very similar with the Texans receivers, because like we could say Nico Collins is the best, and someone else could be like, what about Tank Dell, and what about John Mechie or Robert Woods? So like I wouldn't be surprised to see them all go late, but yeah, I don't think anyone should be going too much earlier.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think where he went, I think that makes perfect sense.
Oh, your boy just went.
Oh, sorry, I clicked off. Wait, who just...
Brock Purdy.
Oh, Brock Purdy's off the board. This is one of the rare mock drafts where Brock Purdy goes before Trey Lance.
Which is how I think it should be.
I think it's how it should be, because all signs point to Purdy being the starter come week 1. But I think people are still sort of, you know, focused on the shiny thing, and that is Trey Lance and seeing what his upside could be. I think it's also going to help Trey Lance's ADP that the reports at OTAs are that he was playing ahead of Sam Darnold. So it appears that he's going to get that opportunity if Purdy is not ready to go. So that may have something to do with it. But literally, I've seen a lot of Trey Lance ahead of Brock Purdy in mock drafts. Let's see. So Nico Collins goes 13.7. Bryce Young at the 13.8. Israel Abanaconda at 13.9. Brock Purdy goes 13.10. You and Juwan Johnson, that's been, you've gotten the tight ends that you have been big on. You got Darren Waller, you got Juwan Johnson. You have gotten your guys at the tight end position so far in this mock draft. Adam Thielen, 13-12. Let's talk about life comes at you fast, man. I mean, Adam Thielen was, what, not that long ago. He was a second, third round pick.
I've been the low guy on Thielen for years, and even I'm like, last pick of the 13th round? Sure, why not?
Sure, why not? Why not take that shot? So let's see. Waiting for the first pick of the 14th round. Oh, we got our first defense off.
Oh, are we supposed to draft a kicker in a defense?
You don't have to.
All right.
I should probably put that in the chat. Let people know.
My question, though, is how many rookies is too many rookies? Because my first four wide receivers are Adams, Cooper, Ridley, and Bateman. And then after that, all of my receivers are rookies. I have Jalen Hyatt, Rashee Rice, and Jaden Reed.
Oh, Jaden Reed. Jaden Reed, who I think is an interesting test case because, again, our pal Matt Harmon is saying he thinks the ceiling is higher than what Christian Watson has.
Oh, that's an interesting strategy right there.
So our pal Aaron Tan, social media guru here. And,
of course, that's Aaron
49er Tan. Fan. I was giving him a hard time for taking George Kittle, but he's also taken Brock Purdy and Trey Lance in back-to-back picks.
I think it's a good strategy.
Yeah, yeah.
With the 15th, might as well go Sam Darnold, and then you have their quarterback locked in.
So that way you're guaranteed to get the 49ers week one starter. I'm a little bit shook. I don't think it's terrible.
If it was like you had to take two quarterbacks to get like, I don't know, the Panthers or something like that, their quarterback room lockdown, it's terrible.
At least you're doing it in a good offense.
Yeah, in a good offense with great pieces and one that historically the quarterback has been pretty good for fantasy purposes.
He really has. So let's catch up here because Cowboys defense goes top of the 14th, followed by Jaden Reed, Trey Lance, Tank Bigsby, and then we go Justin Tucker. So we got a kicker off the board. Sam Laporta is the sixth pick in the 14th round. Rashawn Johnson, then Kareem Hunt. So a lot of the free agent running backs are off the board there. Zeke's gone. Fournette's gone. Kareem Hunt is gone. I know what I'm going to do as long as it doesn't get snatched up ahead of me. I have my eye on somebody, and we'll see what happens here.
I like the Tank Bigsby pick as well. And I mean, 14th round.
Yeah, it's not a bad pick like, in round 14.
Yeah, we're starting to see a lot more rookies go. This
a lot more rookies.
And I always feel like, especially this close to the draft, and I mean, I'm one to talk. I have three rookies on my team, right. But like rookies are so fresh in our heads. Then I think their names kind of pop out a little bit.
No, absolutely. So speaking of rookies, I take Michael Mayer with the 10th pick in the 14th round. So between Kareem Hunt and Michael Mayer, Zay Jones off the board. So we got a couple picks left in the 14th, and then we get to the 15th and final round. I know we have been really praising of Joel Smith in this one. Going back through his roster, he goes Bijan in the first, CeeDee Lamb, Tony Pollard, Jahmyr Gibbs, DJ Moore, Deontay Johnson, Evan Ingram, Alexander Mattison, Anthony Richardson, Daniel Jones, Jonathan Mingo, Michael Gallup, Zach Ertz, and Rashawn Johnson. This is, by the way, Joel drafting from the sixth spot. So kind of smack dab in the middle, able to put together this roster. Not a bad run at all. Anybody else whose roster sort of jumps out at you here?
I like the number one picks line up a lot with Jefferson, Waddle, Higgins. It's unloaded top three receivers. Yeah. Then you get Herbert, Dobbins, Connor. I think James Connor is undervalued right now because when Kyler Murray missed time last year, they were force feeding. Like he became in the end of last season with no Kyler, he kind of became what he was 2 years ago, which was like a rock solid RB1. I liked his build a lot. I think you have a really nice team as well. And then at number four, the Eckler, Jacobs, Mahomes start. I don't love it after that, but I think that is such a good start.
Yeah. I mean, Eckler, Jacobs, Mahomes. Keenan Allen, I think, is okay. That's his wide receiver one, which does come with some risk. Oh, I'm back on the clock. Hang on. I know exactly what I'm going to do.
Oh, so after his Keenan, he went D-Hop, which we talked about. Rashad White. I'm just not a Rashad White guy.
I'm kind of staying away from the Bucks where I can.
And then I've kind of said I'm souring on George Pickens, so I have him there. But that start of that roster, and then like adding like Jerick McKinnon late, Odell Beckham late, I think there is certainly value to be had on this team. I do like that build.
Absolutely. So let's see. The 14th round ends with the Eagles defense and Harrison Butker. Those are the final two picks of that round. It starts with the 49ers defense, followed by Evan McPherson. I did not take a kicker or a defense. I finished with Marvin Mims, who's getting a little bit of buzz in Denver, so I figured I would take the shot on him in the 15th round. Derek Carr is off the board, who I'm waiting for him to respond to Jake Haner's photo shoot. Have you seen the Jake Haner photo shoot?
Yes.
Yes. I need Derek Carr to respond. It's got to be some sort of Fresno State battle. They're both Fresno State guys. We got to figure out which Bulldog is the top dog when it comes to taking glamour shots.
Do you think they talk about that a lot?
Oh, I think they will.
That's probably like what they have in common.
That's what they have in common, exactly. So I'm sure they're going to, you know, every week they're going to be catching up on what's happening with the Bulldogs and what's going on in the Mountain West and all that kind of stuff. So that'll be fun for them. So Carr goes with a fourth pick in the 15th round. The Jets defense is 15-5. Robert Woods at 15-6. Deontay Foreman, who I almost took.
He did it!
I almost took. Oh, no, he's just 15-7 is Deontay Foreman. The Dolphins defense goes 15-8. Kayshon Boutte, 15-9. And Aaron, well, he gets the trifecta. He takes Sam Darnold with his final pick, DJ Chark. Florio goes at 15-11. So the final pick, the Mr. Irrelevant of our mock draft. Waiting to see who it is. Waiting.
I considered Rashid Shaheed here, who is a Patrick Claibon favorite.
He's a Claibon favorite, Rashid Shaheed there, who I think, you know, I hate to say it, but he'll be better in best ball.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely better in best ball.
I also considered Deontay Hardy, who I think is going to be the Bills 3 unless they trade for D-Hop, and not Shakir, but mm-hmm. Shakir's the one that's getting more hype right now.
He is getting more hype right now. I will tell you this. I went straight rookies at the end. My last four picks were all rookies with Tyjae Spears, Kendra Miller, Michael Mayer, and Marvin Mims.
I think that's the way to do it. You get that like young upside late without having to pay a huge draft price for it.
And that was sort of one of my New Year's resolutions for fantasy, that I was going to draft more rookies. So the final pick is Daniel Carlson. That is the final pick of this mock draft. So it is. There it is. 15 rounds in the books. I will post this on twitter.com so you guys can see the whole board and give your thoughts on what you think and how you think we did. All right. I know this is beefy. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and we're going to do what we really set out to do. Let's talk about Con Air.
I totally forgot we still had to do that.
Yeah, we're still going
to
talk about Con Air, right? I mean, we watched the movie. We should do this. So if you guys want to join us after the break, we'll be glad to have you.
Please
Otherwise,
do.
We appreciate you hanging out with us. But we're going to take a quick break, come back, and we're going to talk about Nick Cage in an airplane. It's going to be fun. That's coming up next on the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey guys, this is Matt Jones, Drew Franklin from the Fade This podcast. We got a great episode coming up, picks in all the sports, football, basketball, we do them all, but here's a preview of this week's episode. Do you think it's more embarrassing to dye your hair or to have hair plugs?
I don't think either are embarrassing if you're not trying to conceal it and act like you didn't.
Okay, so you think if you just come out and go, I got hair plugs.
Yeah, like check out these hair. I mean, don't just walk around, hey, tapping, hey, stranger, I don't want you thinking this is natural. You know, but I mean,
do you have to do that with everyone you meet?
Some people try to act like they, you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, like John Cena got him. You know, when John Cena came back to wrestling, he had a bald spot, and now he doesn't. Mm-hmm. You think he should be required in all interviews to say, look, by the way, I covered up my bald spot?
Yeah, I guess it's weird. I mean, you don't wear a sign or like put a sign in your yard, but.
All right, so what about toupees?
Those are the most obvious.
But let's say you're like Bill Self, and you can get it to where it looks good.
His is magical. I don't even know if his is a toupee.
It is.
I think he went into the future and had a procedure we haven't even discovered yet.
And this episode was brought to you in partnership with DraftKings. To hear more, listen and subscribe to Fade This on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
The holidays have arrived early this year. Why wait until fall when you can get Black Friday prices now during Blinds.com's annual Spring Black Friday sale? Blinds.com's the better way to get custom window treatments totally online. No waiting around all day for salespeople to show up or dealing with inflated showroom prices. Upgrading your window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact. Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Browse premium blinds, shades, shutters, motorized options. We have your patio covered for spring too. And Blinds.com's free design experts will help you find the perfect window treatments for your home. We'll even send free samples. You can even get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. Plus, free shipping and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale now for the best deals of the season. Save up to 45% plus premium doorbusters. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah, it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back with kind of a special segment here on the podcast, because we're still going to do Florio's Film Festival, because why not? We all sat and watched Con Air. I paid my $3.99 to rent it, and so let's kind of get it in here. By the way, thanks for if you guys decided to kick in after the break and hang out with us. We're grateful for that. No, you know, you didn't have to. So the quick synopsis. Con Air, released June 6, 1997, a newly paroled ex-con and former U.S. Ranger Cameron Poe finds himself trapped in a prisoner transport plane when the passenger seizes control. Your immediate takeaways from Con Air.
I liked it. I thought it was good. it was good in the, because I like bad action movies, I guess. Like, as long as the action isn't too over the top or anything like that. And this was good in the sense of, one, it had a lot of big name actors, I think, before they really were big name. Like, poor Dave Chappelle's character deserved better than
poor
than
Pinball. R.I.P. Pinball.
I still don't fully understand how he ended up where he did.
Yeah.
Because he was running alongside the plane.
And then all of a sudden just, yeah.
But besides that, I was like, he deserved better. But a lot of big name actors and people that you root for. And that's always big for me. Like, I need to watch something where I can be rooting for the characters. And I very much so was, because one, they make you like the good guy characters, but two, they really make the bad guys unlikable.
Right.
Like, especially Danny Trejo's character. Like, you're rooting for his demise the whole movie.
Old Johnny 23. Yeah. There's nothing redeemable about
at all
about his character whatsoever. Yeah. I mean, there are extremes. There are no gray areas with the characters in this movie, right? Like, you either root for them. There's, you know, the Cameron Poe. There's Baby O. Like, you're rooting for those guys to make it. There's Vince Larkin, who's like the heroic, you know, U.S. Marshal. And then there's the DEA guy who's just like kind of a
jerk. He's more unlikable than the criminals.
Some of the criminals.
Are, yeah.
Yeah, it's black and white, right? This is not a movie that has nuance. Like, you're not going to sit and really, like, you know, you're not going to have, they're not going to be think pieces written about Con Air, right? You just get your popcorn and you just enjoy sort of what happens in this one. The budget of $75 million grossed $224 million worldwide. Wow. So, yeah, this movie made some money. Was released the same month as Face Off, which is another movie we have watched on
this one
show.
Was way better than Face Off.
Way better than Face Off. Yeah, this one holds up way, way better than Face Off.
Oh, yeah. Like, Nick Cage is better in this movie. But both are movies that, when we were talking about it before we recorded, I understand so many more memes and GIFs now online now that I've seen these two movies. Like, Nick Cage was such an icon. The other thing I noticed too, though, 90s movies, I'm guessing it seems like a theme now where, like, this movie, like, okay, yeah, he beats someone up, kills someone because they were harassing his wife. That happens in like 30 seconds. And, like, I feel right. Like this isn't the first movie we've watched where it's like, this is what shapes the whole movie, but it happens in the first like 5 minutes and that's it.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, this movie wastes zero time getting into it, right? Because you get Cameron Poe, you know, coming back from his stint with the army, immediately goes to jail, which, by the way, it was self-defense in which he killed the guy. Like, it wasn't, you know, an unprovoked attack. Like, this guy was harassing him and his wife. He fought him. He killed the guy. Somehow he still gets like 7 to 10 years in prison.
And I will say, I knew zero about this movie going in. Mm-hmm. So watching it, I was like, oh, it's a prison movie. And then I was like, oh, wait, no, this makes sense. They're going to be on the plane. And then there's numerous times where I thought the movie was like nearing its finish. And it's like, oh, no, we're just making a detour or something like that.
These are the dumbest. You make two different stops. Like, yeah. If you are committing crime and you're trying to escape, you don't like stop for gas. You don't go pick somebody up.
And you don't get rid of some of the criminal. Like, why were some of them willing to just get left behind?
Off the plane? Right, because the rest of those guys are like, you're going back to jail. Like, yeah. you're not just escaping.
That's why, like, Pinball, it made sense. He was like, I don't want to be in prison. I'm willing to sacrifice my life to try to get back on this plane, which I still don't know how he got to where he got.
The wheels. But
it makes sense. The other guys who were just like, yeah, we'll stay here. We'll... so you guys can get away. I'm like, no one would sign up for that.
No one would sign up for that.
I also love that they just randomly started like digging out the plane. I'm like, there's no way that would work.
I will say this. the cops took forever to get there. They were on the ground and he's like, how far away are they? Oh, 10 to 12 minutes. Somehow in 10 to 12 minutes, they're digging out a plane. Cyrus the Virus comes up with a plan of, not only comes up with a plan of escape, but finds junk around the junkyard to create a diagram of the airfield that we are at.
And they find so much weapons.
So many weapons.
Like, they go from having nothing. They have one gun on the original plane, or two guns, I believe.
So they had, so I know that Cyrus says, I have the only gun on the plane, but I think it's because he didn't realize that there were more guns underneath.
Oh, okay.
He was not aware of that until later. So for him, in his mind, like, yes, that is the only gun that we have on the plane. But then they find the other guns. They go to this airfield. They find a ton more guns there. The cops that are apparently 10 minutes away took about half an hour apparently to get there.
That was the part of the movie where I was like, they're doing a whole lot in this little amount of time. Also, the cops would not have let them get to Vegas. Like, when they're over the desert, 100% they would have shot down there. They wouldn't have been like, there's one guy on there trying to get back to his wife and kid. They would have been like, sorry, buddy.
Sorry about your luck.
Yeah, you're going down with the rest of them, and they would have just shot him all. But once they get to Vegas, that is where I was like, that's where Nick Cage's story would have ended. He would not have jumped on a police bike, and nor would they have let him.
No, it would have been like, hey, man, I did my part. I'm going back to my wife and kid. My kid, who I've never seen in person at this point. She's like in the second grade, and I've never seen her in real life.
That part was ridiculous. The other parts that stood out to me was Nick Cage just straight up eats a bullet like it's nothing. Like, he hits, and he doesn't even slow down. And then, like, 10 minutes later, he's on the fire truck using his arm that just got shot one-handedly. And he's like, at one point, like, I was like, okay, this this is where maybe it's going a little bit too far, but the crash scene into Vegas was a really cool, like, it was a really cool scene. Shot well and everything.
But also, like, it would have created so many casualties.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why, like, they would have just shot it down.
You're landing a plane on the Las Vegas Strip. I don't even care when it is. Like, it could be a Tuesday evening. Like, you're going to have casualties with cars on the Strip, people walking up and down the street. I mean, you went from, like, you went the entire length of the Strip into downtown Las Vegas. That thing went a long way on the ground.
My other question was, why did they want to make a happy ending for arguably the worst character in the movie, Steve Buscemi? Who, it's him versus Danny Trejo's character for work. Like, the other criminals are intimidated by Steve Buscemi. They're like, you have to see what, he's a serial killer. You have to see what he does to the people. And then, like, it's a happy ending that where he's he at the leaves crap the little girl. The yeah, and then he's at the crap. I was like, so this doesn't seem right.
I will say this. For as much as they build up that character, Garland Green, as much as they build up the character, he doesn't do anything. You know, I know there's, you know, the old, you know, the, when it comes to writing, the theory, I think it's Chekhov's gun, right? Where if you introduce a gun at some point in the story, it has to go off. And in the context of this, in a story with a ton of guns, he's sort of the quote unquote metaphorical gun, right? He's the big wild card, right? They, like, what was the line? Like, he makes the Manson family look like the Partridge family. Yeah. Like, that was the thing. He doesn't do anything. He hangs out with the little girl.
Yeah.
They sing the song. The girl's okay. And then, like, he escapes and goes to play crap. Which, by the way, if I'm a wanted serial killer, I'm not just gonna go hang out.
No,
the crap,
because you're getting 100% caught. Right? 100%. Especially while they're searching for criminals in Vegas.
Yes.
Like, who just escaped. But the little girl, I was happy he didn't. Obviously happy he didn't kill her or anything. Yes. But the one thing that I think he added was, like, when they're all freaking out on the plane and he's just singing "I Got the Whole World," yeah. I was like, that's cool to see his, like, criminal mind.
How,
like
crazy
he's kind of twisted and stuff. But yeah, I wanted him to do something or get caught.
He doesn't
or
actually do anything. They build him up and then, like, nothing. He doesn't. He's just there.
Steve Buscemi's made a career off of being that guy too, like the one who doesn't do a whole lot in movies, just, like, kind of talks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's his role in a lot of movies.
Pretty much,
like.
But he's good at it.
He's great.
He's
at
made
it.
A wonderful career out of being that guy. A couple other things. Nick Cage apparently traveled to Alabama to work on his accent. I am by no means an expert on accents or dialects. I just want, if there's somebody who's listening to this pod who is from Alabama, I need to know how authentic was it, because I feel like it was a trash accent.
I was gonna say, so I finished this movie yesterday, and then I was like, okay, I'm gonna do some work. So while I was working, my cousin Vinny was on, mm-hmm. so I. Love that movie, threw it on, and that is an Alabama movie.
Yes.
And the accent sounded way different than
Nick
Cage.
I feel like it was a trash accent, but I just want somebody who knows more than I do about these sorts of things to tell me.
Looking at the notes here, June 20th of 1997, like, Nick Cage dominated that.
Oh yeah, no, he was dominating the box office, because, I mean, look, Face Off, as badly as it holds up, made a lot of money.
Oh yeah.
And this movie made a lot of money. So
this I feel like made more than most of the movies we've talked about,
probably. It also cost, I think, more than most of the movies. I think,
yeah,
maybe Terminator 2 might have cost more, because that cost a lot of money, also made a lot of money. But yeah, this is up there in terms of box office success. Let's see, other notes that I thought were interesting. Some of the people chosen to play Cyrus the Virus: Gary Oldman, who I thought could have been pretty good. Kevin Bacon, Alec Baldwin, George Clooney, Robert De Niro. That would have been weird. James Gandolfini. I couldn't imagine Tony Soprano.
Pre-Tony Soprano.
It would have been pre-Tony Soprano, but that would have been weird. Let's see, other interesting names. Michael Keaton. John Travolta. I could see John Travolta doing
that. That would have been great if Nick Cage and John Travolta had two movies
at the same time. That would have been amazing, right? Where they're battling each other. Some of the people chosen to play Cameron Poe: Patrick Swayze, Tom Cruise. I don't think it would have been as entertaining if with Tom Cruise. Brad Pitt, Keanu Reeves. I could see Keanu Reeves as Cameron Poe.
So I know all of these actors for how big they are now, but, mm-hmm. like, at the time, was Brad Pitt Brad Pitt?
I don't think he was quite to the Brad Pitt level that you know him now, but he was, I think he was still like heartthrob, you know,
okay.
Brad Pitt.
Johnny Depp, point. I know, was very big at that point. Already.
Yeah, Brad or Johnny Depp was definitely a big deal.
The others, point. Like Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Steven Seagal.
They were
Seagal,
definitely big deal. They were big deals.
Van Damme, like those would have been very different movies.
They would have been very, very different. Because like with Cage, you know, there's the action part of it, but there's also sort of like, there's kind of the wink and the nod that he's just goofy at the same time, too.
And like, the scenes where, like, his hair is blowing in the wind and stuff like that would have been so different.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it, you know, it's a different movie.
The bunny scene would have been significantly less funny, I think, if it was any of those guys.
Why couldn't you put the bunny back in the box?
That accent was so bad when he said it that
way. So terrible. So terrible, that one. All right, so... I mean, it sounds like you enjoyed this movie. Would you willingly watch it again?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because it's one of those movies where, like, you could kind of just mindlessly watch, and I live for movies like that. Like, I love throwing movies on that, like, you can just kind of get lost in and not really pay attention. It's why we like Fast and the Furious on this podcast so much.
Absolutely. So I got to ask, because I know you're putting a ranking together of the movies we've watched so far. Was it Pulp Fiction was one? Was it Speed was two and Point Break?
Point
three.
Break two,
Point Break
three.
Two, and Speed three. Does this crack the top three?
So that's the thing. I haven't added it yet because I keep going back and forth. Like, do I want to put it after the Keanu Reeves movies? I don't think it's going to top Point Break, but I think it might slide in. It's either going to be three or four for me.
All right.
Then I'm like, Terminator 2 probably is a better movie, but I don't know. I just, if you can't tell, I enjoy very bad action.
Oh,
like,
yeah, no.
Movies
see,
with a ton of action.
That's part of the reason I wanted to do this, because like I wanted to watch some bad action movies. Like,
they're so entertaining, you know? So like, great. I get made fun of, like, Four Brothers is a movie my friends make fun of me all the time for liking, but I'm like, but it's mindless action and stuff. Like, I enjoy that.
Yeah, so that's why I'm enjoying this series. So, all right, so a big thumbs up for Con Air. Next week, we're hoping to get our pal Laquan Jones on the show, and he made a request. He wanted to talk about The Last Action Hero from 1993, Arnold Schwarzenegger. I will actually come clean and say that I've never actually seen The Last Action Hero, so this will be new to me too.
So next week it's both of us.
Next week it'll be both of us, and so hopefully Laquan is available to come in and talk about it, because that'll be fun. He will be the expert on this film. I have actually honestly never seen this movie.
To be honest, you are like the pop culture guy. Like, if you haven't seen something, I'm very shocked, because like there's.
I don't know how I missed it. I was like thinking about this. I'm like, how did I? I mean, like, it was that summer. I would have been 16. It was prime movie going time for me. For whatever reason, it somehow has eluded me all these years.
There's very few movies I feel like that I've ever been like, have you seen this? And you've said no to.
Yeah,
so.
this is one I don't know. It somehow has just slipped through my fingers. So I look forward to watching this one.
There you go. Talking about it. That should be the thing. Whenever we have a guest, it should be like, give us one movie that you want us to watch.
That's true. That's maybe that's what we do, because we're gonna start reaching out, getting guests on, and we can have them come in and talk about movies that they enjoy. All right, this has been a beefy long show. Thanks to everybody who jumped in to help us out with our mock draft. Thanks to all of you who sat and listened to all of this, especially if you stuck around for the movie portion of this whole thing. We're certainly grateful that you spent your time hanging out with us. In the meantime, that'll do it for this edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast. Stay happy, safe, and healthy. Do good and live well. Enjoy whatever bad action movies you want to watch, and we will talk to you next week.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.